I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. New Jersey's anti-bullying law, considered the toughest in the country, is in effect with the start of the school year. All public schools are required to adopt policies to combat bullying and harassment. That includes staff training, a designated coordinator, mandated reporting, and a grading system for how schools handle the problem. Those who fail to comply face serious penalties. There are no additional funds to support these new measures. The Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights was passed almost unanimously by the legislature and signed by Governor Christie earlier this year. And while some applaud the new law, others say it goes too far. We're going to begin our conversation talking about this new law with John Mooney. He's the founding editor and education writer for NJSpotlight.com. And John Mooney, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hi, Mari. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Good.
How does this law define bullying?
Well, I mean, it goes into several areas. For one, it certainly treats what has traditionally been seen as bullying, which is, you know, repeated harassment, you know, oftentimes having some sort of bias element to it. One of the things that this law has really taken a big step on, which has been quite controversial, is it's also included things that happen outside of school, and especially things that may happen online or in terms of texting. And basically where it's defined there as a bullying element that the schools have to deal with is something that affects then what happens in school. And so it's something that may be carried over and affects whether a kid shows up to school the next day or feels comfortable in a class and that kind of thing. But the definition is one of the controversial elements of this is, you know, what exactly is bullying? What is bad behavior? Is a kid pushing another kid bullying? And there's, you know, some have questioned whether the law is definite enough on those types of things, and it does leave some judgment to teachers and administrators, but that's where it starts getting sticky for them.
Well, and just quoting a couple of partial sentences here, an incident must either substantially disrupt or interfere with the orderly operation of the school or the rights of the other students. Also, the creation of a hostile educational environment for the student by interfering with the student's education or by severely or pervasively causing physical or emotional harm to the student. Those are some of the words part of this definition of bullying.
Yeah, and where it's going to be the tough part is basically what starts the whole process is it being reported in one form or another, be a teacher or administrator or even a custodian for that matter. They're part of this process, seeing something that might rise to that level or hearing about something that might rise to that level. And that sets off the clock, and the law is pretty stringent in terms of a time frame that things have to be reported and then investigated, and then you know, in terms of resolve to a degree, whether parents are pulled in or not, and it's, you know, that's where the investigation comes in is does it rise to that level of really being hostile and really affecting school and affecting the kid.
Let me make sure I understand and our listeners understand as well. So in a school, if an adult hears about or sees something that looks like bullying, they are mandated to report it?
Yeah, if they hear about it. And kids are, you know, I saw something, I think, in a district up here, East Hanover, has a box in the hallway where kids can slip in notes and report things. Now, whether that, I don't know if that actually, to be honest with you, I'm not sure that necessarily would set off the full process or not, and because kids can do all kinds of things.
Sure.
But certainly if a teacher or some other adult in the building witnesses or hears a credible, and credible is a big word here, hears a credible report of one, he or she does have to report within 24 hours. It says the same day, and so there's even been some back and forth. Does that mean if it's at the end of the day, does they have to do it that day or 24 hours later? But I think most are seeing it as within 24 hours. And then within 48 hours after that, whoever is doing the investigation, and there is typically somebody assigned to this job, has to launch that investigation, which is often usually calling parents and some other witnesses within 2 days. And then again, within 10 days, you have to have some kind of resolution. There's ways to extend that out. But again, there's some very strict timelines on this. And that's what's, you know, gotten, and you'll hear later in your show,
yes,
but that's what's gotten some of the administrators and educators a little bit concerned. On the other hand, this comes out of a decade of New Jersey having a law on its books that, you know, that talked about and tried to address bullying as a as a problem in schools, but enforcement was really spotty. So the pendulum has swung widely the other way.
Well, and let me again dissect a couple of things that you said there again so everyone understands. When an incident is reported, is it reported to the school principal? Is it reported to one of these specialists or bullying coordinators? Who gets that information?
Typically, the point person on this is going to be a coordinator, a quote-unquote coordinator within the school, and every school is now mandated to have one. And that is typically going to be a guidance counselor or a student's assistance counselor. Might be a vice principal. It's not going to be the principal. It is somebody whose job is specifically to deal with these types of things. Their name and number is supposed to be on every school's website or every district's website. There are hotlines that have been set up as well that refer these things to these coordinators. But yes, there should be a point person in every single school that deals with this.
Now, I was reading about the East Hanover District that this information can also be reported to the Crime Stoppers hotline, and the police could get this information.
Yeah, I mean that's schools are dealing with it differently. Typically, there's a one of the difficulties of this is there's not a lot of money, if any, mm-hmm. to address this, and I've seen schools that have incorporated into law enforcement into this to a degree. That East Hanover was really the first one that I saw that was the very first step. Now, that may be just a hotline as opposed to going directly, and that hotline may send it back to the school. But, you know, law enforcement is a piece of this as well. And certainly when things really rise to some significant levels, law enforcement gets involved as well.
So if a child, a student is home and they're texting something obnoxious or even harassing about another student, the school must get involved? Intervene?
If it's reported, the school has to take a look at it, yes. And if it's in a way, and this is where these lines get drawn, if it's in a way that really carries over back to the school, and, you know, where does that happen? I mean, you do hear, and there's been some fairly decent research on this, that a large number, you know, a significant percentage of kids at some point or another do, you know, decide not to come to school for a given day or days because of the potential harassment they face there and or that they've been facing, and then they're going to see these kids in school. So, I mean, there's no doubt, and we've unfortunately seen some of the worst of this as well, there's no doubt that a lot of harassment does go on online, through texting and the like, and it does carry over. I mean, how could it not? Mm-hmm. But when do you draw that line? But again, it has to be reported. The school isn't necessarily the one that's, you know, got to go fish it out. But if they learn about it, they got to look into it. And that's where it really, you know, you're talking, it's taking some real time. Because then you're getting into some of the forensics of it, and certainly even just calling in parents. I mean, this is, you know, this is a new world for these schools, and a lot of them have been dealing with this to a degree already, mm-hmm. but now they really have some requirements and some boxes they got to check to do it right.
You talked about the coordinator and the timeline that things have to be dealt with in a pretty timely way within 24 hours and an investigation completed, I guess, in 10 days. So is there are students then brought in and asked what happened and what interrogated
as they have been in the past?
Right.
I mean, that's typically what has happened. And if it and oftentimes, I mean, you know, resolution of it may be, you know, the kid acknowledging there's a problem and you know, apologizing and moving on. I mean, it doesn't always mean that these kids are, you know, certainly going to be hauled off to jail or anything. So, I mean, I think a lot of these things do happen and have happened for years in many schools and teachers dealing with it one-on-one. But now you're building some structure around it and advocates, and you'll hear from one later, who feel this is needed because schools have let these things slide. And there are examples. And there's some harsh examples which, you know, send chills. And so, mm-hmm. you know, this is that reaction to that. And it's, you know, it's a big lift for schools because they've often dealt with these things on their own, and now they have to really, you know, go through the motions.
Is there a role for parents in this new law?
Well, part of it is that they be alerted to it and trained on it. Schools are required to do workshops that involve parents on it. So, yes, there is very much a role for parents, and some have said that this really should be about the parents. But schools now have the task of talking to parents, alerting them. I've seen, you know, I've heard of one district up in Morris County where two or three memos went home to families about this before school started. So they're very much a key part of this.
And for schools that either fail to comply or don't, in a sense, enforce this new law, what are the penalties?
Well, they haven't. That's pretty murky. They have talked about having a grading. Well, it's in the law that there will be a grading system that will mark on schools. Now, how that exactly is going to be worked out, is it going to mark down whether you had an investigation, how was that resolved, what was the step that was taken after that, and we're not quite sure. In terms of penalties, I mean, oftentimes you just having a, you know, an F on a report card is you know, the public shame enough. I mean, typically these things have, you know, sometimes they can talk about withholding funding on that, but I've never seen that happen in New Jersey on any of these types of things. There certainly you might have to, you know, write an improvement plan to say you'll do better next time. But again, even how that's judged is going to be difficult. We now report bullying and violence in schools and how they're resolved. And, you know, nothing, a whole lot comes out of those reports in terms of any kind of sanctions. So it's going to be interesting how that works out.
And are there prevention programs that are now instituted in classrooms in New Jersey?
Yeah, and there have been a long time. I mean, that, you know, I don't want to leave the impression that we're going from 0 to 60 on this. I mean, bullying has been a pervasive problem in schools nationwide, not just in New Jersey, for a long time. We had one of the more pioneering laws back in 2002 that really brought a lot of awareness to it. And schools deal with this, especially elementary and middle schools. This one does speak to some more workshops. I think there's a anti-bullying week or period of time when schools are required to a degree to hold assemblies or the like. But again, these kinds of programs have been out there for quite a few years. This now, you know, puts a little teeth into it to require every school to at least be addressing it.
And about a minute before we have to say goodbye, what has been the general response from schools and from school districts?
Well, I think it's, again, you know, this is a big and bureaucratic lift for some of them, and there have been some concerns about that. And there's even, you know, to the point where the administration is talking about ways to maybe pull back on a couple things, but a lot of it's in the law. So the legislature is really going to be the one that would have to address that. Conversely, there's a lot of folks who say, okay, you know, I mean, we've gotten to a point, and kids are really getting hurt. That having some of these strictures in there is important to have. So you see the mix, but you'll hear a lot from administrators and teachers that they're a little worried about this, and there's some liability that if you don't start that investigation right off, are you going to be held to it? If you don't finish these timelines, you'll be held to it, and we don't know yet because it's, you know, we're literally 2 weeks into this thing.
Well, John, thank you for getting us started. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for your time. Okay. John Mooney, the founding editor and also education writer, NewJerseySpotlight.com, getting us started as we talk about New Jersey's new anti-bullying law. We have two guests waiting in the wings, and we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We'll also be opening the phone lines as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Christiana Care Health System's Center for Heart and Vascular Health supports WHYY. Studies show experience makes a difference in patient outcomes. Recognized by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, Christiana Care cardiovascular surgeons perform more than 800 open heart procedures each year, and the team of heart specialists treats more than 8,000 total heart and vascular patients annually. Christiana Care, with locations in Pennsylvania and Delaware. More online at christianacare.org/heartleaders.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing, storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine, weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM, or listen online at WHYY.org and NewsWorks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow NewsWorks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
Who are you having dinner with on September 24th? Join media sponsor WHYY for an evening with 30 of Greater Philadelphia's leaders in business, government, and not-for-profits at Mount Airy USA's annual Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, an event to support community revitalization efforts in Philadelphia. For more information, visit www.guesswhoscomingtodinner.org. link, www.guesswhoscomingtodinner.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about New Jersey's new anti-bullying Bill of Rights, a law that was passed earlier this year, signed by Governor Christie. And it takes a look at harassment and bullying in New Jersey schools and comes up with a series of rules and regulations to deal with that particular problem. And joining us now is Richard Baza. He's the executive director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators, a former Spanish teacher. And Richard Baza, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Pleasure to join you this morning.
Nice to have you with us. Also with us, Stuart Green, the founder of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention. He's also a licensed clinical social worker and behavioral scientist at Overlook Medical Center. And Stuart Green, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks very much, Marty. Hi, Rich.
Hi.
And I figure you two know each other. And Stuart, I'd like to begin with you. How serious is a problem of harassment and bullying in New Jersey's public schools?
Well, one answer is we know that this is very common. On average, we talk about 30% of students in a school involved in bullying, of whom about 8 to 10% are persistently harmed. But it really is an issue that affects every student in school. The other answer to that question is we don't really know, because New Jersey, in particular, and some other states, but not all, has a terrible current system in place for assessing the extent of bullying and other issues related to it. So we need to know a lot more, but we know it's pretty common.
And Stu, what do you hope this law does?
We hope the law changes the atmosphere around bullying and makes it more of a priority and a focus for everybody in schools, administrators, staff, also parents and communities. Although parents and communities are pretty good at getting upset about this issue, and rightly so, whereas schools, administrators, and staff, it varies a lot from school to school, which is part of the problem, but it's not yet enough of a priority for educators in the state as a whole.
And Stu, I want to put one more question to you, and then, Rich, I do want to get you in on the conversation. And this was something I asked John Mooney. How does the law then define what bullying is, Stu?
Well, the law has a specific definition, which is, of course, legal, because law is written by legislators, mostly by lawyers, somewhat a little bit different than how academics and interventionists define it. But the law does a reasonable job. It talks officially about any gesture, written, verbal, or physical act or electronic communication that physically or emotionally harms students, places them in fear of harm. And very importantly, what this law does that few, if any, other laws in the country do is talks about creating or allowing to be created a hostile environment at school for the student. So that's very important. The law also lays out a number of specific, what we call enumerated conditions, which simply reflects our very good understanding of the students most likely to be targeted for harm.
Rich, what's your response to this anti-bullying law?
Great intention. Schools have been, I think as Stuart indicated, perhaps somewhat unevenly, but addressing this for a very long time. I don't think New Jersey's experience is any different than other states, but certainly our new law has gotten the attention of states across the nation about what our experience will be. And we are very supportive. We absolutely agree with the zero tolerance for bullying, but critical of the application of the law, because we believe that it's overly prescriptive in many regards, and that the definition that Stuart's referencing can be interpreted right down to a single incident and cause real concern about clarity on what is bullying, how should it be reported. And the emphasis on reporting, unfortunately, has gotten more attention than the emphasis on education and support. And I think one other thing that Stuart mentioned I think is really important is this aspect of community. Legislators often will come down and say, we're going to take whatever the social ill is, we're going to put it into the school, where absolutely we need to address these issues as part of an education system. But this bullying goes well beyond, always has, the school walls. It's been places that are unprotected for kids, and now the real concern that I've heard over the last number of years from school leaders throughout the state is bullying taking place in cyberspace, mm-hmm. and now the requirement for school leaders and school personnel to address that as well.
And I want to get to all of that, but going back to you, Rich, if 30% of students in schools are being harassed?
Well, no, involved in it is children bullied, children who do the harm, et cetera. That's a cumulative figure.
Okay.
You can safely say about 8 to 10% of students in a school are the most persistently targeted and hurt. So in a 400-kid middle school, that's 30 to 40 mm-hmm. kids having the worst day of their lives most days they go to school.
Rich, what can, though, be done to ensure that those children, that 8 to 10% of students in schools in New Jersey, are not afraid to go to school?
Well, you know, I think the real answer here is not the law alone. The law certainly has some very good points in it. But, you know, as I've said oftentimes, if it were just the law, there'd be no criminals in jail. If it were just rules, there'd be nobody in detention or suspended. Mm-hmm. The answer here is the school climate, the ability of kids to feel safe in their schools. That's something that's certainly a greater emphasis here and is really as much of a cure as one can find. That is to establish a school community where kids don't tolerate, they aren't bystanders, they understand language in terms of how to report it. These are all very, very important steps that really lead to making those children feel safe and being able to come to school. There certainly have been great figures about how bullying has increased, how many kids are afraid to come to school, and those are things that, you know, the school absorbs, not creates. I think so often we talk about problems that come to the school as though they were created in the school, but they're not. But we do need all to work more diligently, including our parents, including our civic leaders, our religious leaders, to make our communities, which the school is a part of, a place in which we're going to have a greater emphasis on. We don't tolerate that, and we stand for respect for one another.
Well, just picking up.
Stu,
hold on just 1 second. Just a quick follow-up to what you just said, Rich, which is I can imagine that some schools do a very good job of dealing with this climate as you talk about it, and other schools do a less good job. How do you create some kind of consistency without a law?
Well, I think educators want to do that. Nobody wants to walk into a school where, you know, there's concern. I mean, we have places in throughout our nation and in New Jersey where teachers are afraid to walk the hallways. We have to understand that there are differences in our schools for a whole bunch of reasons, some of which are the competency of people and the commitment that they bring, but it's also the communities they serve and the problems that they inherit. And so I wouldn't be surprised as we look around our state and say some places are going to have a more difficult time because the behavior of kids both inside and outside of school is not the same as it might be in other communities.
Stu, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I do. And by the way, we appreciate very much Rich's involvement in this. He's always consistently supportive of the essence of the law, but there and what we're trying to do. So we thank him for that, and the administrators and staff and others in schools who you know, sort of get this issue. But here's one problem and one difference we have with Rich's perspective. When he talks about the community, you know, as a place where bullying occurs and where it has to be addressed and as a source of the problems, this was an old myth about bullying that was held for, you know, centuries until about 40 years ago when we started to understand the issue scientifically. It used to be believed that bullying was an issue that arose in bad families and bad communities and bad kids and somehow leaked its way over into the pristine, innocent confines of schools. And that's one of the big myths about bullying that science has exploded over the last 40 years. Bullying mostly occurs in and mostly arises in schools. Mostly aside from what's happening out in the communities and out in the families, not that it's not influenced by that. It's such a common understanding among people who study this issue that we sort of half joke about it as the Willie Sutton rule. You know, he used to say that he robbed banks because mm-hmm. that's where the money is. And bullying mostly occurs in schools. That's where the kids are. And when you talk about social issues being addressed in school, we all spend 12 of the most formative years of our lives in these institutions, spend much of our time there, our parents, and our attention is rooted in what goes on there. And there are people who run these places and who staff these places and are responsible for addressing the social issues that inevitably arise in there. And paying attention to social and emotional issues, including violence, of course, is so fundamental from an advocate's point of view to what it means to have a school and to be a school administrator or staff and to do education, that we shouldn't even need this law. Needing this law at all is like having a police department, probably a bad metaphor because it isn't all about rules, but I'll use it for a second.
Okay.
It'd be as if you had a police department where you needed a law in order to tell them that their role is to take a look at criminal activity and do something about it. I'm not saying you don't need laws, and we needed this law, but we really shouldn't have needed any of these laws. And the history is also important.
Well, you know what, Stuart, hold that thought only because I need to quickly reintroduce the two of you. I want to give Richard Baza a chance to respond
I'm
as well.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I appreciate your passion on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we are talking about bullying, a problem in schools across the country, probably around the world. New Jersey has a new law, an anti-bullying law, that has gone into effect with the start of the school year. And Stuart Green is the founder of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention. Richard Baza is the executive director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators. And to you, our listeners, how should schools handle bullying? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Rich, let me go back to you and picking up on what I think Stu was talking about, which is the kinds of behaviors that we hear about in schools would not be tolerated in a workplace. You know, you can't insult people at a workplace. You can't obviously beat them up in the bathroom. You can't do certain things to other people that would be harassment or bullying or even terrorism. So why not just, you know, apply the laws of the workplace to the schoolyard?
Well, that suggests that they're not being applied or that people stand by and they ignore this. I mean, I appreciate that Stuart understands that I've certainly been supportive and continue to be in terms of these things. But, you know, being a critic doesn't mean it's an opponent. And where does bullying take place? It doesn't take place typically in the eyes of in front of an adult. It takes place in the least supervised situations, the bus stop, the route to school, the playground, the gymnasium, the cafeteria, wherever it may be. It's not typically when students are closely supervised by adults who are setting the standards for behavior and reinforcing them. And that brings me to the new world that we're in. The most consistent complaint about school leaders is the spillover of what's happening in cyberspace into schools because it's instantaneous. There's no thought. Kids are responding. There's a permanent record, if you will, of what occurs, whether it's the cell phone, if it's Twitter, if it's Facebook or other kind of social media. And this law requires, and by the way, not without some conflicting rulings in courts about the authority of school leaders to reach beyond the school walls to handle behavior with kids. So a couple of things. Absolutely, this has to be, you know, we're committed to having, this is what educators do. This is what brings us into the field.
Sure.
We care about kids. We want to see them be successful. And we spend our lives and our careers working towards that. And wherever people aren't taking that responsibility seriously, there surely ought to be consequences, and they ought not be in the profession if they don't care enough about kids to stop the pain that they're experiencing. But again, we're saying this is, you know, what Willie Sutton said was because the money was in the banks, the kids are in the schools, this is certainly a big part of where the problem occurs, and I certainly agree with that. But that doesn't mean that we don't need parents at home supervising their kids, reinforcing the standards. I mean, all of us have been to athletic events with kids where the parents are worse behaved than the kids. And that certainly can carry over into the work environment as well. It's not to suggest that those things don't occur there either. But, you know, we expect more from adults. We expect more from adults in schools. We need to set that example. And as I mentioned earlier, it's the school climate that we establish is more important than just the punishment or the investigative procedures that are in this law.
Well, let me go back to you, Stu, and just ask you a question.
I have some comments.
I figured you do, but let me ask you a question first, which has to do with this off-site bullying, whether it's through texting or social network or Facebook. Why is that a school's responsibility? If a child is home or you know, at the local 7-Eleven texting about another schoolmate?
Well, first of all, I'll address that. Let me see if I want to address it first. I'll address that.
Do that first, if you don't mind.
I just wanted to address first the point that Rich made about most bullying happening not under the eyes of staff. In fact, when you survey students, the Youth Voices Project, 15,000 student responses, others, you find the point of it is that staff don't see because they often don't look or don't know what they're looking at. And from students' points of view, staff are aware of much of this, and all those places that Rich named, the bathrooms, the hallways, the locker rooms, etc., those are places that belong to the school, and they are under the supervision of the school, and school staff are responsible for what goes on in those places. And those places are classically unsupervised or undersupervised. So the violence that goes on there is the responsibility of the school, and they can do something about it. And in the same sense, to move on to cyberbullying or electronic forms of bullying,
yes,
or off-school ground bullying, there's a myth about cyberbullying. And the myth is that it's a completely separate thing from school life that takes place sort of between strangers or only takes place off school grounds. And studies by Pew and others have shown that most electronic forms of bullying and most off-school grounds bullying either precedes or is quickly followed by in-building bullying. Most electronic forms of bullying and off-school grounds bullying occurs between kids who know each other from the same communities, school buildings, schools, etc. And to the extent that that off-school grounds bullying occurs in tandem, typically, with bullying occurring between students in the school, and even if it didn't, that it ends up very much affecting the functioning of those students at the school, it needs to be addressed by school officials. The law does make a distinction and follows follows the rulings and talks about substantial disruption in student functioning at school, as as required in order for schools to address the off-school grounds thing, incidents that occur.
And Rich, let me get you back in on the conversation.
Sure.
Would you agree, though, with Stu that when there is, and we're talking about cyberbullying here, when that bleeds into the schoolyard or even into the classroom or the cafeteria, that affects the school culture that you're talking about?
Yeah, see, we're not disagreeing, because schools have always done that. What the point that I'm trying to make, and perhaps unsuccessfully, is that the opportunity and the amount of these incidents has now mushroomed due to this social networking that is taking place at school in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, does it carry over into the school? Clearly it does. I do think, however, that this definition of what occurs and what bullying is right down to a single incident, which I know is, as far as I know, is the only place in the country that has that, and even I know from Stewart's work, they talk about, with the experts that convene this summer, talk about a series of incidents. You know, so we've got what I think is going to be a contention with parents after there's been an investigation and perhaps there's a determination that this is not bullying. There's going to be a lot of confrontation about exactly what does that mean, and I think to some extent that's why I see professionals in the schools being overly concerned about reporting rather than sitting down with children trying to resolve problems as trained adults in a way that they might have perhaps the day before this law was passed.
And we're almost up in a break here, Rich, but you're concerned because it's mandated reporting, and if it's a single incident, there might be some either confusion or overreach?
Well, I think as in the cases that we've seen in similar areas, parents are going to suggest you can't reach into my home and punish my child or investigate what's going on here.
Do we have time before the break?
No, we don't.
To make a point, or do you want me to wait?
I want you to wait, but it's just a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to make sure we get listeners in, and we are talking mm-hmm. about how you think schools should handle bullying. We have just one open line at 1-888-477-9499. Talking with Richard Baza, the executive director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators, and with Stuart Green, the founder of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention, and we are talking about the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights, a new law in New Jersey, being instituted in schools today. We'll be right back.
Reading Terminal Market supports WHYY. Reading Terminal Market at 12th and Arch Streets has been a Center City landmark for over 100 years. The market's 80 local merchants offer farm-fresh meat, seafood, and poultry, plus produce, baked goods, Pennsylvania Dutch foods, and dozens of eating options from Philly favorites to a wide range of ethnic specialties. Parking is available at the Parkway Garage at 12th and Filbert Streets. Information online at readingterminalmarket.org. Reading Terminal Market, fresh and local every day.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. How does the Arab Spring and the Palestinian move to ask the UN for statehood change the equation for Israel in the Middle East? Also, a look at the fall TV season. Hint, if you want good drama, go to cable. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Opera Company of Philadelphia launches the 2011-12 season this month, featuring Bizet's Carmen, Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio, and Puccini's Manon Lescaut at the Academy of Music, and more intimately scaled productions of Nico Muley's Dark Sisters and Curtis Opera Theater's Elegy for Young Lovers at the Perlman Theater. 215-732-8400 or operaphila.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Richard Baza and Stuart Green about New Jersey's new anti-bullying law, considered the toughest in the country. We do have a full bank of calls, and Stu, I know you want to say something, and if you can keep it short, that would be great.
I'll try.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, I want to say that advocates, myself, my group, we like the fact that Rich always emphasizes culture and climate, and many administrators do, and that's really where the action is in terms of addressing bullying. But the problem is, and the reason we needed the law, is the variability. There are some schools, administrators, and staff where this issue, where they get this issue, and there's, you know, some better addressing of it, but there are too many schools where this issue is not adequately addressed. And I want to say something about reporting and the timelines for reporting.
Yeah, just quickly.
When we had the commission hearings, there were many, many organizations represented at those hearings, and there were actually far fewer advocates or parent perspectives. And one of the big points of contention in the commission hearings, the commission's report is what the law was based on, that I chaired. One of the big points of contention was that from parents' and advocates' point of view, there needed to be an emphasis on reporting and a timeline for it, because there was story after story after story where schools in New Jersey had not paid attention to these incidents or the patterns that underlie them and done anything to address them or investigate them. And from the Department of Education point of view and school organization's point of view, this was anathema. They hated it, the idea that there would be anything mandatory about this kind of timeline for reporting. The reason that you have this is because this law was not written from the point of view of school administrators and staff or for their comfort. This law was written from an advocate's point of view and from a parent and community point of view. And this is what parents expect.
Okay, I got to stop you there, only because mm-hmm. I do want to get some callers in, and we have, we have, it looks like Tim from Plainsboro to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Tim, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
I applaud the effort here with the anti-bullying law, but my concern is twofold. One, what about those persons that are on the radar screen, tall kid, boisterous kid, versus the little kid that might have a real subtle harassment or intimidation? And two, my concern is also the culture of the student. It seems like there is a culture amongst the students for harassing and intimidating. I was a chaperone for an outdoor education trip, which was a camping trip,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed that there are some really bad things that are said one student to another, one ethnic group to another ethnic group, and it seems to be a part of the culture. So if a faculty member or administrator has to report this, how will they do that as a teachable moment, as opposed to a penalization of the student for just participating in the culture of the student body?
Well, Tim, let me toss that first to Richard Baza. Richard?
Well, to Tim's first point, whether it's subtle or it's overt, we certainly want to be in the fight against any kind of behavior that's not appropriate for kids, and that's harmful in any way. I mean, that certainly is the goal. It's the goal of the law. It's the goal of advocates. It's the goal of school people to really address that. And so, you know, whether minor or not, I think as you're trying to suggest, minor can certainly lead to more overt kinds of behavior if it's not addressed. And that's where we go back to, where we talk about what is it that we all expect from one another, and how do we teach respect and tolerance and to work out how do we resolve problems. The issue of reporting versus professional judgment on the moment, I think, is a real one. And I think, again, we've got to look at how does this happen. When I say, you know, being critical is not being oppositional, it's, for example, I'm a basketball coach at a time at which there's no other personnel in the school, and it won't be for a week. How do I report it to the principal? What do I do? So these are practical things. I know Stuart mentioned comfort. It's not about comfort. It's about How do we achieve the goals that this law has, and how do we do it practically with boots on the ground?
Tim, thanks for the call. Let me get Matthew from media to join our conversation. And Matthew, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
My comment is for the administrator, because I really think you're downplaying the role that schools have in bullying. Even if the bullying is initiated outside the school, put yourself in the place of that student. If it's happening outside the school, the kid can go home. They're safe in their home. They can not look at the text. They can turn off their computer, and maybe they don't have to deal with it. But during the school hours, 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, for however many weeks out of the year, the kid is stuck in the school with the kids who are doing the bullying, and the kid feels unsafe because they cannot leave. And this is why the law is absolutely necessary, to protect that kid so he or she feels safe when they go to school. Whether the bullying is actually happening constantly there or not, the kid has to be confronted by that bully every day, and the kid needs to feel safe at school so he or she can learn. That's why they're there.
I appreciate the call, Matthew. And I'm going to toss that first to you, Rich Baza, but I'm sure you, Stuart Green, want to weigh in as well. Rich, go ahead.
There's nothing I can disagree with the comments that were made. It really, we do have to deal with it. We actually do deal with it. And there is no suggestion that where it's not being dealt with adequately, that it can't be improved. It should be.
Stu?
What you hear from Matthew is very powerful, and it underlies this law. It's the perspective of a parent, I assume, a community member, or somebody who's accessing the memories of their own experiences in school. This is the powerful perspective, the place from which this law and our expectations as advocates on this issue come. So that's what I would say about Matthew's point. I would just say yes, absolutely. And in terms of Tim's point, kids and the culture and climate of schools, kids are tremendously influenced by school, by the behavior of adults in school. And it's not what the adults say as much as what the adults model and display, the way their relationships with each other, the extent to which they act as if they get along, the way in which a principal uses fear-based or power-based relationships with staff or not, whether there's a meaningful professional learning community amongst the staff in a school, and how positive and warm, really, they are toward the kids in their charge. So the culture and climate of a school, and to a large extent, the culture and climate that kids have with each other, even outside of school, is tremendously influenced by the way adults run these environments. And by the way, when an adult is present and kids are, you know, saying things to each other, you know, it's certainly school staff responsibility or a trained volunteer responsibility to say something about that. And when adults don't, that's partly where kids get a message from that this kind of stuff is all right to say and to do.
And Rich,
this is not rocket science.
No,
we know how to impact the culture and climate of schools. It's just a question of whether there's a will to do it and a sufficient understanding of this issue as a priority. I want to say
Hold on. Yeah, we got to make
sure. Sorry, go ahead.
We got to make sure there's equal time here. Okay?
You're right. Sorry.
That's okay. And we also want to make sure that we get some more listeners
I'm
in.
Sorry.
It. No, that's okay. At 1-888-477-9499. Rich, let me ask you something that actually I put to John Mooney, who got us started talking about this anti-bullying law. And there is a East Hanover district in New Jersey where these incidents are reported actually to Crime Stoppers hotline, which then I guess could end up in police involvement. Does that concern you?
Not very much. It concerns a number of people, but I think any outlet to report this information, and having spoken with that superintendent and listening to the county prosecutor's office talk about how they handle it, they talk about it in a reasonable way, and I think it will be handled appropriately. So that Crime Stoppers have been in most schools. They're part of agreements that are developed with the local prosecutor's office on how kids can report things anonymously that are occurring. So I don't see that as any concern. But may I follow briefly on,
yeah, please,
on one of Stuart's comments? I think as Stuart recognized early that there's uneven application here, and it may be even uneven from one end of the hallway to the other. But I think what riles educators when they hear this, because they talk about the exceptional instances or whatever degree there is where people are maybe not stepping up completely, that suggests that everybody in the system by inference is not doing the job, and that really gets people upset because they're working hard out there to do the right things by kids. And where we agree is where personnel aren't doing that, they certainly have to be redirected through education, through training, and through discipline where it's appropriate.
And would penalizing them work as well, Rich?
Well, yeah, and discipline is appropriate, sure. In any way of life, if someone is not performing the responsibilities of a job, particularly the care of children in their custody, then they need to stand up to that and take the consequence, whatever that may be. They shouldn't be in education if they don't stand up for kids.
I hear you. Let me get Kelly from Wynwood to join our conversation. And Kelly, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I just have a concern a little bit about the zero tolerance policy aspect of these things. I think that in a lot of instances, it may prevent schools from really spending the time and implementing the programs that would really be able to repair the relationships between the children that are involved in bullying, that sometimes that effort of whether through mediation or other programs that allow children to work through those relationships, they're just sort of expelling or kicking those kids out. I understand the safety concern, especially with violence and bullying. However, I do have a concern about that being an across-the-board policy.
I'd like to take Kelly's question if I can, Marty.
Absolutely, Stu. Go ahead.
Okay. This is a misnomer or something that's been identified with the law that's completely wrong. The law doesn't talk about zero-tolerance policies at all. And, in fact, nobody should be talking about zero-tolerance policies. Zero-tolerance as an approach is completely discredited. It's been studied exhaustively, including by the American Psychological Association, which issued a report on it. Zero tolerance is not to be applied, ought not to be in place in any school. When zero tolerance approaches are in place, there's an overemphasis on overly harsh and automatic penalties, including suspension and expulsion. And in fact, it's been shown that when zero tolerance policies are in place, they're disproportionately applied to populations of color. It's really a sort of racist approach in the end in terms of how it's implemented to handling problems. So when schools talk about having zero tolerance approaches in place, it really just shows that they haven't followed the literature and don't understand what works and doesn't work in education.
And
so the law does not promote zero tolerance approaches. It doesn't include that language, to my recall. Certainly shouldn't. And we don't promote that or advise that. This is not even about incidents primarily, although that gets focused on a lot. Instead, it's really about what Rich pointed to before, the culture and climate of schools. Most incidents have to be prevented, and that can be done because most incidents are not single incidents. Most incidents have a pattern behind them that has not been identified adequately or dealt with in advance of the incident.
Let me get Kelly. Thanks for the call. We've got George from Wrightstown joining us on Radio Times. And George, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
My concern and question is as follows. It seems that more and more you have violence in schools that even affect teachers. That certainly can't be good on the climate. And also understand that in schools, in many instances, when discipline is tried, the parents immediately bring a lawyer in, and that is it is dissuading in terms of the teacher standing up against this general negative climate in the school. So will the new law not only put an obligation or responsibility on administrators and teachers for general conduct within the school and anti-bullying, but will it also empower the same teachers and administrators so that they don't have to be concerned about being dragged into court all the time?
Let me see what Rich Baza has to say. Rich, go ahead.
Well, I think the answer here is, and it references, I think, this issue of zero tolerance. I think when people say zero tolerance, they're trying to demonstrate a strong commitment to the goal. And then when you look at the policies that require punishment or counseling or whatever it may be, you see that it isn't zero tolerance in effect, because I think the last thing that we want to do is take away the judgment of the school principal, the school teacher who's acting responsibly. And so
right.
We don't want an overly prescriptive policy which suggests as soon as this happened, that happens. And
right.
So, you know, let me just say when I hear that, I hear commitment. I don't necessarily hear unbending rules.
Okay.
Because I think I agree completely with Stuart on that. In this case,
right.
will it empower teachers? I think we're back to the same thing. If people are committed to this in their school and to their school district and their school community, which involves parents as well, then we're going to have a climate which empowers those teachers. And so, yes, do places exist where adults don't feel safe? Yes, and we can't tolerate that either. And so we need to work cooperatively to do that. Rules are one part of that, but again, working on that school culture, working on that community culture is the long-term answer. Not easily achieved, but an important goal.
And Stuart, we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye. You are a clinical social worker. Mm. How do you suggest, though, in the sort of one-on-one interaction, if there has been some kind of incident, what is the best way for two students with some help to resolve that incident?
Well, first and foremost, when there is an incident, it almost always indicates that there's a pattern behind it, that this student has been hurt before, and that needs to be looked at by the school and understood. So that's one thing. The second thing is, in terms of a student who's been hurt, to focus on them, and that's really where the focus should be. The most important thing that can happen at the level of the school is that that parent gets a clear message from the school, through whoever's representing it, that that the school is concerned about this, that they don't want this happening in the school, and that the child who got hurt certainly didn't deserve getting hurt or bring this upon themselves. The school starts with that understanding and wants to do everything it can to support that child and make the child's experience better going forward. And it may seem obvious when I say that that's what parents should get from schools, but all the calls I get are calls after parents have had multiple interaction with schools in New Jersey and haven't gotten that kind of attitude or commitment from the school, have gotten a sort of adversarial, you know, sort of response, which upsets them greatly.
Well, we have to end on that note because they're playing my song. That means we're out of time. Stuart Green, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And Richard Baza, thank you for joining us as well.
Pleasure to be with you.
Richard Baza, the executive director of the New Jersey Association of School Administrators, and Stuart Green, the founder of the New Jersey Coalition for Bullying Awareness and Prevention. What do you think schools should do about bullying? Go to our Facebook page at whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times.